everybody. Welcome to the Mackey and Judd Show, powered by Federated Mutual Insurance Company. We're going to talk about all the big moves the Twins have been making on this Twins Tuesday today. It's going to be very exciting. We have another episode of Dex Reviews and maybe a revenge game, air quotes, revenge game last night for a former Timberwolf. Federated has been helping business owners in the Twin Cities for over 100 years, based in Owatonna, Minnesota, and they are now launching MyShield, the online destination for risk management resources. Think about this as a business owner. How helpful would it be for you to have your employee training all at your fingertips, industry resources that can help your business reach another level of success? Think about the things that your employees may use, company vehicles, ladders, other things that involve risk that you may want to have a plan or a policy in place for. That's where MyShield comes in with resources to help your business. To find out more, go to federatedinsurance.com or download the app. And you can also find contact information for your Federated Insurance marketing representative. At Federated, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackey and Judd on Score North and scorenorth.com.
Is it just different for you now in year eight as a vet, now with the team, with so many other vets around you?
For sure it's different because everything here is organized. You know, you know what you're doing every night. You know where you're getting stuff into. You know the minutes you're going to play. You know your rotation. And there was a couple years like that in Minnesota where everything was, you know everything. I was with Coach Tibbs. Tibbs was very organized. Tibbs was very, very clear. You know, he's very straightforward. You know, that's one thing they do here. They're very straightforward. They're not going to sugarcoat nothing. There's no trick questions, you know, so it's good.
Huh. Wow. Seems like he forgot to mention a certain coach that was also coaching him. He thought it out, Tibbs.
I feel like he just cast shade upon both Saunders.
Yeah.
Like, who are his coaches here? So he said, you know, Tom Thibodeau was organized. That guy was awesome. But then he didn't name Ryan. He didn't name Flip. Mm-mm. Sam Mitchell was his coach for a minute.
Boys.
A lot of shade there.
Mm-hmm. This is the most predictable, lazy answer from a guy who doesn't care about his craft and is now perfectly situated where he should be. As Jim Pete said on the FSN telecast last night, Andrew, as a supporting player, is happy and he's fine. He's pretty good, right? But when he is asked to carry the mail, when he's asked to be the guy, he fails. And what else does he always have, you guys? He always has a reason why he failed. But it's got to be quick because he's got to get home and play his video games and do whatever else he does at home.
Why are you so anti-video game all the time?
And all the other activities.
Yeah, you don't, just because you don't like games doesn't mean you have to like be all negative toward Andrew Wiggins.
Playing video games and other
quarters.
Other stuff.
Because I'm not anti-activities if you apply yourself in the activity that you're supposed to and don't make up excuses for why you failed. Last night's that press conference was as predictable as possible, a series of sideways shots from Wiggy, which my favorite part.
They're not even sideways. Like, he's just like ripping the.
But my favorite part, and it's so him, was to credit the one guy that he knows. I mean, it's just all BS. But I love how he like absolves Tibbs. Like, he absolves Tibbs and essentially then throws the Saunders so both of them, plural, under the bus.
Yeah.
He throws Gerson, who I think the trick questions was a Gerson shot. But anyway, my God.
So,
everything that you couldn't stand about him is what he did there, Phil.
This may surprise you, but I actually have a different thought on this. It's not a full disagreement with you, but I definitely disagree. Like, you listen to that clip and you think, oh my God, Andrew, like, dude, like, what revision? It sounds like you're saying, what revisionist history to like blame the system and coaches around you when
the correct response is, I'm a better fit here because I don't have to do as much.
Okay.
That's what the response should be. I didn't like being a star. I just want to be paid like one.
And by the way, he went for 23-6 rebounds. 23.6 rebounds, 3 blocks, 3 steals against the Wolves last night. The Wolves without Cat, without D'Lo. I mean, the storyline this week would have been even juicier if D'Lo was playing, because then we could get a comparison.
I've got some thoughts on that, but go ahead.
Sure. So first off, anyone thumping their chests over Wiggins' performance this season, and by the way, we have a YouTube channel, we have two YouTube channels, Purple Daily Podcast and Score North MN. And the Score North channel we just launched recently, and we're posting basically daily videos there. So if you want to check us out and see our ugly faces, is it fair to say, Declan, that the most popular video that we've posted so far, and I say popular in air quotes, the most engaging video so far is us ripping Andrew Wiggins for having like 5 good games to start the season.
Yes.
And Warriors fans found that video.
Yep.
And just like have gone into the comment section. They think we're idiots, which we are clearly. So the jumping off point is like all these Warrior fans thumping their chests over Wiggins' performance this season. Like he's been unlocked. He's been unleashed. This is the Wiggins that, all right, you guys are paying max money to a role player for one. So let's get that straight. The expectation when he was in Minnesota wasn't that he would settle in as like the fourth guy who blocks a couple shots and we celebrate every time he scores 20. His time in Minnesota was he's supposed to be the dude who carries the franchise, right? So let's start with that, and that the bar for which we analyzed him for 5 years here and the bar for which Golden State is analyzing him is a different bar.
Yeah.
Their bar is, can he block a couple of shots and score some points and stand in the corner and hit some threes and like be a productive role player?
They've got Steph Curry to lead the way.
Yeah, and Draymond is a leader, and Clay
they're not hurting for alphas.
Right. So that aside, and this is where I differ in my interpretation of what I watched, I think the Wolves should be hammered for the way that Wiggins has been playing this year, because they had Wiggins for 6 seasons in which he was legitimately statistically one of the worst players in the NBA. And people are going to say, what do you mean he scored 20 points? He scored 20 points because they kept running him out there for like 40 minutes a night. He was, from an efficiency standpoint, win shares, player efficiency rating, anything that would measure your efficiency over the course of an NBA game and season, he was legitimately one of the worst players in the NBA. He goes to the Warriors for like 5 minutes, and he's now this quality role player that you can rely on to get some stops, all right?
Yeah.
That is a huge yet unsurprising indictment of the Minnesota Timberwolves, that he becomes a credible role player the minute he goes to a competent organization.
And you are, we do not disagree one bit on that point. What I'm saying is the reality for Andrew should be to say exactly that, which is, I don't have to do much here.
He
this
kind
is
of did,
great.
Though, didn't he? He's like, well, they have great structure here.
Right, I mean, right. But just admit, I was a disappointment. I got a max contract and robbed you. Like he is robbing Golden State financially. But if he didn't make as much, then he's fine, right?
You know, Glenn, in that conversation Glenn had with him in terms of the money that he robbed from Minnesota, Glenn sat down and said, "I'm going to look you in the eye. I want you to tell me." Eye contact, face to face, that you're worth this money. He should have done that, but with like role player in mind. Instead of $30 million, how about 12?
Well, that's right. He should have
to be a role player.
They should have told him, "We will pay you X amount and not a dollar more because that's what you are." But by the way, I didn't look this up. Statistically, was our guy great with Tibbs? Like Tibbs was Arbach or, you know, Wooden, I want to know, like, the stats. Tibbs must have been clamoring to get this guy for the Knicks because he was so good with Tibbs, according to him, because the structure was there.
Wiggs makes it sound like it was a Phil Jackson Kobe partnership.
Yes.
You know,
me and Tibbs were tight, we're thick as thieves, and then they canned his ass, and now I was stuck with this kid who didn't know what he was doing with me.
Oh my God!
Boy.
The other thing too, like just to lump both these guys into the same discussion here, the other thing that happened last night in a 16-point loss, granted. Zach LaVine had his 8th 30-point game of the season. His 8th 30-point game of the season. He scored 30 points last night on 11 of 19 shooting, 6 of 10 from 3. They did lose by 16 to the Celtics. And so, like, you know, in terms of the indictment on the Wolves, Zach LaVine going off, having a career season. Wiggins, you could say, is having a career season in terms of just being an efficient, quality role player. Low bar. Jimmy Butler, you know, in the bubble 4 months ago, almost single-handedly won the NBA Finals for a shorthanded Heat team. And I think what frustrates me the most is, like, I am frustrated in the way that you are, that and Andrew always has, like, a reason for why he never has become what people thought he would. But my biggest frustration today is that you get these talented dudes in your ecosystem, Wiggins, LaVine, Butler, and they all short circuit and fail in your ecosystem. And then the minute they go somewhere else, it took LaVine a minute because he tore his knee. But like once he got healthy.
And Butler too.
But the minute they go somewhere else, it's like, boom, takeoff. They get to another level in their career.
He had to go to Philly and then to the Heat.
Okay, so he had a pit stop, but
he had to get the team that he saw as being his team or his ideal team.
But my main point is like the Wolves have zero chance to maximize. And this includes Kevin Garnett, by the way. Because Kevin Garnett had to go somewhere else to maximize his talent as a champion. In 30 years, they bring these dudes in, and they have zero chance to see their peak potential through. And that pisses me off. So I'm mad at Wiggins, too, for just being like,
I'm not mad. Great. I just want the truth. And I do think that in the case of
you
LaVine.
You can't handle the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
That's the sad thing is I can, because it's the Wolves. In the case of LaVine, I think if he had stayed here, he would have developed very well. Unfortunately, with Andrew, I don't think that that was the case. And I do think in Golden State, he'll decline. I just don't think he cares enough.
I think we're seeing what he's capable of, which is not leading a team.
I have a weird.
I don't think he declines off this. I think they've got him to stop taking some of these idiot shots that he took in Minnesota.
I have
five
a weird
years.
Feeling though. He's so disengaged and he doesn't really like basketball. I got a weird feeling that he can be a role player who is effective, and he can stuff the stat sheet at times. So I'm not going to be shocked if the stats continue. But I think as far as this whole thing of oh man, have they unlocked? He's unlocked. Okay, there's nothing in the house. There's no furniture. There's no food. That's him. But yeah, I mean, it's maddening. And here is the most frightening thing to me, and because I watched that entire game last night. The most frightening thing to me about this is, and it's clearly without Kat playing, so it might change then, Phil. But I can't tell you, and they lost by 16. And as much as God bless him, Dave Benz was trying to will us to believe that, the Wolves at one point, he said, the Wolves are within 13. They got it down to 13.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you're playing in San Francisco. You got no chance. But as much as he tried to will us to believe that they're not down by 20, so that's good, without Kat, and way more importantly, because I'm not indicting Kat completely at all here, just to be clear, but I am D'Lo. They are a far more fun team to watch that's executing what the coaching staff and what the team wants when D'Lo's not playing. Like his style, Phil, his style alone does not fit what this team wants to do at all. And with Ricky and McLaughlin as your two point guards, they run a scheme and an offense that is far more engaging than what they do when their supposed second star player is playing.
I agree that like they have moved the ball around and things have become much less stagnant. Now they're also just still getting like they got their asses kicked last
night. Yes, you are correct.
But I hate to be scapegoat guy here, but like I can't judge D'Lo fully until he plays more than five games with Karl Anthony Towns. Because the plan wasn't bring D'Lo in and then, you know, run him off screens with Naz Reid. And like the plan was I'm not going to say proficient, like he's a good pick and roll player. And if you dig into some of the metrics the last couple of years or going back to his time in Brooklyn, he averaged like 11 to 12 points per game off pick and roll with Brooklyn. And in a small sample size, the Wolves have run some pick and roll with him. But like the vision is. Pick and roll game, that's D'Lo's strength. With Karl Anthony Towns, who could be one of the great pick and roll screen men who can pop a three or roll the hoop, right? And they've only been able to implement that five games. So, like, I agree with Kat out, this thing actually looks like it moves better without D'Lo, but with Cat in and D'Lo in,
right,
I still believe in the potential. I don't know if I believe in the potential as like Batman Robin championships in 3 years, but it's so hard to judge. Like, it's so frustrating because they should look better than they do with D'Lo and no Cat.
That's my problem.
But the vision is D'Lo and Cat.
It is.
So
it is, but I would like to see it. But if Cat can't play, I'd like to see it not just fall apart. And it feels like if Cat can't play and D'Lo plays, it's like, too bad.
Yeah. Now this
That's
little,
not a good thing.
Is it like a thigh contusion or something for D'Lo?
They called it a quad contusion, which they said he suffered against the Hawks on Friday. And then he sat out on Saturday. What's curious about the whole thing, though, is that initially on Saturday afternoon, when they said he wasn't going to play against the Pelicans, they listed it as rest. So that's where like people like me freaked out. You're like, he played 21 minutes last night and he's resting. And then they came back on Sunday and said, oh, no, on second thought, it's a quad
contusion. Is there a chance that they just want to avoid the whole Warriors, D'Lo, Wiggins thing this week?
There's a chance that it's odd, to your point. There's a chance that it's very odd that you wouldn't have just come out and said quad contusion on Saturday if it was a quad contusion.
Yeah. I hope that it's not. We just want to avoid this whole, like, the whole Wiggins, D'Lo trade comparison thing. Like, I don't think it's that. I buy that there's an injury here. I hope it's not that. Because if it's me, and I don't know how bad his injury is, but like I would want to get out there and show, no, like those guys made, I know I was only there for like those 7 minutes, but like those guys made a huge mistake by trading me. I am a franchise guard, and I'm going to show you with or without Cat why I'm a franchise guard. Like, absolutely. And again, if he's injured, he's injured. So I'm not sitting here and trying to question his toughness, but like I hope it's not that. The way that they laid out the injury report and they sort of stop-started, it feels fishy.
Yes, and I'm curious if it doesn't involve the Golden State concern and it involves what you were talking about, which is getting Cat back with him. Like, they look so bad without Cat and with him. I can't tell you from the eye test, like, last night was a 16-point loss, and it's a bad loss. For lack of a better description, gents, they look like they cared. The last time I saw them play with D'Lo, which was on Friday night against the Hawks, they looked like they didn't give a damn. Like, that's concerning. And I'm curious if they are privately trying to get to what you're talking about, Phil, which is Cat and D'Lo have played 5 games together. We need to get them back at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm just, it does seem weird that you wouldn't have just come out on Saturday and said quad contusion, that you avoided that and then basically rethought it.
I think, you know, however you feel about the D'Lo thing, I think they're just attached to him now. So his contract, he makes $28 million this year, $30 million next year, $31. So call it $30 million on average through 2023. So for sure next season and then the season after. And I don't think at this point, I don't think you're going to be able to get like a first round pick for him. So not that he's untradeable, because once his contract becomes a dead money, once it becomes like an expiring contract, it actually becomes valuable.
And Cat wants him here.
But like we need to see Cat and D'Lo on the court here. Okay. Like, it's literally been a year since they made that trade.
And they played 5 games together so far.
We need to see these guys together.
5 games together. Yeah.
So, that's the Timberwolves, and again, that YouTube channel, if you're a Warriors fan and you just hate us, you're welcome to go into some of our other videos on youtube.com/scorenorthmn.
And don't forget, Tibbs was the key.
Tibbs.
I want to add,
organize Tibbs.
If you're a Warriors fan, you might also be a San Francisco 49ers fan. You can check out our Kirk Cousins to the 49ers trade videos on youtube.com/purpledailypodcast. Are you guys ready for Twins Tuesday?
Oh, yeah.
Should we fire this thing up?
Let's do it.
Little Twins Tuesday. All right, that was Twins Tuesday
that was
here.
That was a great
Maggie and Judd.
That was a great recap.
There it is.
It was fully accurate too.
Thad Levine, actually, Twins general manager, who we do love, and he has been a fun guest on the show throughout the years. We just wish he would sign Trevor Bauer. Thad Levine was on the Scoop podcast with our friend Darren Doogie Wolfson, Apple, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com. And you know, we were texting the three of us last night, and Judd's biggest question was, so like, what is your plan? Like, what do we do here? So Thad, I'm just going to play a couple of these clips. We'll see if we can decipher what the plan is from some of these clips.
So, yeah, no, I think our goal is to add to this team. We're desirous of adding both quantitatively and qualitatively. So we want to add to the depth, but we also would like, you know, we see a lot of really talented players out in this market between Derek, myself, Rob Anthony, Jeremy Zoll and Daniel Adler. Like, we're in constant contact, not only with agents, but also with some teams about, you know, keeping our finger on the pulse of trades. It's been a little bit slower moving unless you work for the San Diego Padres.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, the San Diego Padres making moves.
Can you play the Jays? Can you play moves. The chirping again? That's in my brain right now. Mm. That's what's going on in my brain for baseball. What was the back-to-back words?
I love that desirous, so much, man.
Desirous.
I would play this again.
Quantitative.
But he said he dropped it quantitatively and qualitatively.
Thank you. That's what it is. Desirous.
I love him.
He just needs to make some moves.
So, yeah, no, I think our goal is to add to this team. We're desirous of adding both quantitatively and qualitatively.
Oh, man.
All right. Here's a Nelson Cruz update.
He's been invaluable to this franchise. And, you know, regardless of what transpires this offseason, he's left an indelible mark on this franchise. But, hey, listen, we are in constant conversation there. And I'll just leave it at that for right now.
Kind of sounds like he's bracing people for whenever you say, regardless of what happens, aren't you bracing someone for?
Yes.
Now, listen, Dex, regardless of what happens, you've been a really good producer for this show. Just like, regardless of what may happen, you've just been.
That contract's almost up.
It's been great.
Brace for landing.
Yep.
Assume the crash position, Twins fans. Assume the crash position.
All right. Let's see here. This is, I think Doogie asked him about trades. Are there any like untouchable players that you
want? Okay. What word is he going to use? Let's play a guessing game. What word is Thad Levine about to drop?
I'm going to say he drops superfluous.
Ooh, that's a good one. Superfluous. That's Phil. I like where you're going.
I've listened to these, so I can't really.
Okay.
Did he drop superfluous?
He did not.
Okay. That's a good one, though.
So philosophically, we have tried to not work in those terms. Realistically, there are some players that it would be very difficult for us to part with. So we're less inclined to initiate conversations with certain players involved. But I think one thing we owe to our fans, one thing we owe to our team and our owner ultimately, is to evaluate every opportunity to improve this team, whether it be in the short term or the long term.
Our owner?
First of all, philosophically, right off the bat.
Philosophically, Judd Zolgad's a very important part of the show.
Philosophically, let off.
Is he untouchable?
Right off the bat.
I mean, the show is called Maggie and Judd.
Okay,
we really like the one syllable name, but like, could another one syllable person come in?
Can we get another person with four letters in their first name? I'd like to play a game off of that called interpreting for average intelligence what he just said, okay? And I include myself there. I'm not talking down. I am including myself.
Sure.
What he just said is essentially putting a dagger in the want of my partner, Phil Mackey, because he just said, we're not trading any prospects we like.
Well, he said they aren't going to initiate conversations with certain guys. Like, they're not going to pick up the phone and call someone and float Kirilloff. But if someone calls them, and this is what I wonder, if...
Jim Polad's told you can't trade him.
I'm going to assume that they, because I'm going to believe him in that I think they do have conversations with everyone. Like, I think a lot of Twins fans are like, yeah, we love those reports when the Twins had discussions about so-and-so, right?
Poor Dukes.
And I do believe that they probably were on the phone with the Tampa Bay Rays when Blake Snell was available. And when the package comes out, it's like, well, you know that you'd have to trade this and this to get Blake Snell. I don't think the Twins ever, going back to the Terry Ryan, going back to, I'm actually more mad historically. People get all bent out of shape about payroll. And I sort of view payroll as, well, there's no salary cap and there's less revenue sharing. And so the Yankees who bring in $500 million and the Twins who bring in $250 million, well, like the Yankees are going to spend more money on team payroll. Like, I've come to that acceptance and reality. I'm actually more mad historically that they never take a chance outside of Bruce Dar Gratterall. And there might be like one other example.
Mm-hmm.
They never look and say, you know what? I know we think Aaron Hicks might have a chance to be our starting center fielder for 10 years, but you know what? Cliff Lee is available now.
Yeah,
we can, and we can win a World Series.
Yes.
Let's do it. Like,
no.
They don't do that.
No, but he's essentially, to me, drawing a line through a big group of prospects and saying they're not being traded.
Yeah. I wonder how big that group is. Like, is it, if it's Kirilov, I don't think they should trade Kirilov.
I think it's Kirilov, Lewis, Larnick, Balzovich.
See, Larnick should be on that list.
Phil, look at the list that you gave on Tyon in the Pittsburgh Yankees trade yesterday. Like, look at that list of prospects that the Yankees traded to the Pirates. That's an eminently doable deal.
I agree.
Like, that's, but I mean, we agree on that, and yet you don't hear anything. So it's,
I feel like every year,
I think the list is longer than either of us would approve of.
We have to remind, I almost feel like it's our obligation to remind not just the audience, but the Twins themselves. We have to go back 5-10 years historically and remind them what the top 10 prospect list for their own organization looked like. I'm going to give you right now, This is going into the 2015 season for the Minnesota Twins. MinorLeagueBaseball.com, and I think they're getting this from MLB Pipeline. So this is MLB.com's prospect rankings. In retrospect, how many of these guys should have been untouchable? Byron Buxton was the number one prospect. Certainly don't think, in retrospect, that he should have been untouchable. I get why he was, but like, he hasn't done anything in his career. Mm-hmm. He's had like a couple half-good seasons. He's been hurt the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Miguel Sano was number two. Like, Miguel Sano was untouchable.
Gonna play third base for a long time. Yep.
Oh my god, we'd love to have that stud shortstop that's available in his prime right now, but god, we can't trade Miguel Sano. Like, in retrospect, would you have traded the last 5 years of Miguel Sano for an established number one starter? Absolutely.
Yep.
Jose Berrios is number three on this list. A little tougher because, like, he's been a good pitcher.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
but if you could have traded what you've seen from Berrios the last 3 or 4 years for like a bona fide year and a half of Garrett Cole or something, you would have done it. The list doesn't get better. Alex Meyer, fourth on this list.
God.
Who you loved and got from Washington.
Yeah. Nick Gordon was fifth.
And that's another one that where you have no idea now.
Cole Stewart was sixth. It's a fourth overall pick.
That would be easy to, yeah.
Trevor May, seventh. Jorge Polanco, eighth. Lewis Thorpe, ninth. Eddie Rosario, tenth. I would argue you would have traded any two of these guys, literally any two of these guys, for like the Garrett Cole, as long as there was some team control, like a couple years of Garrett Cole.
Right.
Am I wrong? In retrospect?
No, you're not. But the thing about it is it's maddening because, again, it's always, and this goes back to Terry, it's always like they're playing for the future and you're like, but what about the team you have now? Which directly is applicable to the Cliff Lee opportunity.
Yeah.
Because that was like one of those, you got to go for it. And the Twins were like, we're going to be good for a long time. Don't worry, son, about going for it now. It's like, no, you really should have.
And I think what they will tell you is, well, like that list you're reading, you know, all due respect to the old front office and the old minor league system and whatnot, but like, we feel like we have a better development pipeline to maximize that talent. I guarantee you that that's what those guys would say. And they might be right to some extent that they were able to get more out of Tyler Duffy and some of these pitchers. But when you look at the list of current top 10 Twins prospects right now going into next year, I'll just speed through it here. Royce Lewis, Alex Kirilov, Trevor Larnick, Jordan Belozovich, Yon Duran, Ryan Jeffers, Keone Cavaco, Aaron Sabato, Wander Javier, and Blaine Enloe are the top 10. Eight of those guys, you would, in retrospect, 5 years later, you wouldn't even blink. Like, you would be rushing to the trade window.
Yep.
To pair two or three together think to go get an established player. Two of them will make you think. Maybe three.
Think about Nick Gordon. Nick Gordon.
Yeah, ooh, like, he's the second. He's
we
the
don't even know now if he's going to make it.
And he's
when?
Been in this organization for like 7 years.
Yeah.
He's like 56.
Yes.
These dudes are gambling chips. That's all they are.
Yeah,
they're poker chips.
Which is fine. But at some point in time, you've got to be willing to pull the trigger on. But this goes back to the question that I texted both of you last night, which is, where do they think that they are? Like, I can't get a read now at all. You have lost 18 consecutive playoff games. You've been to the playoffs back-to-back years. And fair or not, now you have, it's to your credit that you have established a franchise that can get to the playoffs and win divisions, which is great. But the next step is not continuing that cycle. Like, the fan base, rightfully so, is going to say, you know, it'd be really nice. What's that? A playoff win or a series win, right? And my question, and I don't see a clear answer to it, and I'm really, really being, I'm getting tired of, hold on a second. I'm told more is coming. I'm told more is coming. And nothing happens. Like, how many times have we now heard from various people more because the team is saying that? Of course they're saying that. But, like, nobody's getting answers about, is more like, are you trying to improve for 2023? Are you trying? Do you think that you can win in 2021?
Yeah.
And my problem, too, is just this. I'm so fed up with this damn sport. Like, I am so like, I'm mad at everything about this sport. I've invested myself in this sport, and you too as well, for how long? And for lack of a better term, pardon my French, they are crapping on us every day, and we're sort of just like taking it.
Yeah, so the latest report is that the designated hitter, so the Players Association and the owners are haggling over a bunch of different things, but basically the designated hitter in the National League and expanded playoffs are being used not as ideas to make the sport better.
Oh, hell no.
They're being used as bargaining chips to get either more money out of the other side or to get other things.
Yeah.
They're not approaching the game and these potential changes. And we can debate the changes. Like, I'm sure we could sit here and have a debate over, like, is the DH really a good thing for baseball? I think it is. You'd rather see the pitchers hit whatever.
But that's not the point right now.
They're not even debating that. They're literally debating, like, well, if you get the DH and you want that, then we want more money over here. And blah, blah, blah.
So this thing is so screwed up, okay? Like, so fundamentally. And it's February. It's basically February 1st. Spring training was supposed to start in like 18 days from that date. This thing is so goofed up that these morons, so the owners want the DH because they know that it's better. But it's a bargaining chip for them because they know that the players want the DH because it creates jobs, right? So they basically went to the players and said, okay, we'll do the DH, which, by the way, we privately want, if you agree to expanded playoffs. But who pockets all of the revenue from the playoffs? The owners do. They don't share it. So the players are like, hold on a second here. We're not going to just say yes and not get a cut. And that's where things stand right now. And need I remind you guys that in December of this year, the CBA is up and we're going to have a strike and or lockout?
Dude.
Like, think about this. We are literally on the precipice of a work stoppage before the work stoppage. Dude.
It's going to be bad.
But
it's,
I mean, this is why I'm just fed up with the entire, I'm fed up with the Twins. I'm fed up with baseball. Get your act together. What are you doing?
I think I was hashing this out with some baseball friends and followers on Twitter yesterday. I really like the expanded playoff. I was a little bit skeptical. I love the wild card expansion from like 8 years ago. And then I was a little bit hesitant on like last year's format was such a crapshoot where the 8 seed and the 1 seed basically got the same thing, right? Here it is. Here's a 3-game series. You don't get any reward for winning 100 games. Well, last year was prorated, but like 100 games versus 78 games.
I hear you.
So I would love to see regular season games scale back if needed. If you need to cut like a week or two off the regular season, even just to like pull it back out of football season. I love the idea of an expanded playoff. A, it generates more revenue. That's great for the game. It's, you know, whatever. It just breathes more life into the game. But baseball just doesn't have much appointment viewing anymore. I remember when I was a kid, and I was born in the 80s, and I remember like in the 90s and the late 90s especially, Sunday night baseball was must watch, and some of it was steroid driven. And when it was Sammy Sosa, watch him hit a ball 700 feet with a corked bat and steroids. Tonight, John Miller and Joe Morgan. Hello, everyone. Welcome. That was part of it. But the other part of it was you get like Roger Clemens and Pedro Martinez showdown on 1999 Sunday Night Baseball, right? And I just feel like there's no such thing as for diehard fans, all that game of the week on Fox or whatever. But for casual fans, there's no appointment viewing until you maybe get to like a game 7. I think the wild card games are kind of appointment viewing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would start there and say, okay, what can we do in the postseason to create more urgency and must-watch experiences to hook more people? And I keep going back to this wild card week, this you can have seven playoff teams, three of them advance to an actual series, the other four are wild card teams, and they play a four-team tournament over the course of like 5 days or something, no off days, and it's like wild card week, and the other teams get to set up their pitching rotations. You know, and you can debate me and fight me on that, but like the sport should be having discussions like that.
Absolutely.
And they aren't. And basketball is literally sitting here and having conversations about a mid-season tournament or a play-in round getting to the eight seed. And people are kind of crapping on the ideas. But guess what? Those ideas are well-intentioned because they're talking about how to grow the game and make it more popular for the next 20 years.
And they're not fighting, though. Baseball's just fighting. Like, this is all about money. It has nothing to do, nobody ever considers, including the commissioner, who's just a disaster, nobody ever considers what's good for the sport. They are, the owner's goal now, I guess, is to cut the regular season down for 2021, which, by the way, I'm fine with, but they want to do it so they can stiff the players on paychecks.
Yeah.
And the players are like, no, and I don't blame them. So, but I mean, nobody is saying what you said, which is, let's go back to 154, like we did pre-1961, and let's introduce a playoff week. Like, that's because that's going to be exciting, and then, you know, what the hell, Mike Trout gets in, and maybe Mike Trout playing in the playoffs is a good idea. They're all saying everything that we're doing on both sides is financially driven, not to bring cash into the sport for the good of the sport, but to line their pockets. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, think about this. What drives me nuts is, if this was football, I wouldn't be shocked, because football is the most popular sport in the country. And so their greed knows no bounds, and I'm not surprised. But they're the most popular sport in the country. How do Manfred and company not understand, like, they are allowing their sport, as far as I'm concerned, to die on the vine? Like, that's the difference. The NBA talks about what's good for our sport, and I still think they are incredibly popular. Mm-hmm. So they're like, how do we get more popular? Baseball is before our eyes, and all three of us love this game, allowing themselves to absolutely die. And they don't, it's like they don't even realize it.
Yep. The most popular and marketable, I don't know if marketable, but like the most popular and I would say visible starting pitcher in baseball, popularity, both good and bad, is Trevor Bauer. He's the most visible on social media. He's the most vocal. I think he's mainstream enough now. Like, he's becoming kind of a household name for good and bad reasons. And that dude's just been sitting out for 3 months in free agency. Almost what? Yeah, 3 months. November, December, January. Because the sport can't figure out a better structure to make its offseason more entertaining, too. It's just a bunch of staring contests until spring training starts.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. Since we're taking this time during Twins Tuesday to just bitch about baseball, can I throw this one at you too regarding the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Now, Judd has not read, he told me he has not read this.
I've not read
I told
this.
Him, don't read it. I want to read it to you.
I've not read it.
Bob Nightingale, who I like Bob. I'm going to be really hard on Bob here. Bob's been a longtime insider for USA Today. And he, like us, Judd and I have had a chance to be around LaTroy Hawkins a few times. LaTroy Hawkins is a great dude. LaTroy Hawkins is one of the better Twins relievers over the stretch the last 20 years, where they were like, he popped up for like 3 years as a Twin and was a really good reliever. He's a really good player. If I hadn't seen this headline, I wouldn't even have known that he was on the Hall of Fame ballot, quite frankly. Like, so Bob Nightingale voted LaTroy Hawkins into the Hall of Fame. He was the only one to vote LaTroy Hawkins in the Hall of Fame. And every year you get these wacky, these guys who are on the ballot, like Darren Erstad or whatever, and they, like, one guy will vote for him, and you wonder, what? Like, are you guys friends? Like, he's not a Hall of Famer.
Who was the guy a couple of years back, the pitcher? There was a guy who was complete no-name.
Like an Aaron Seeley or something.
Yeah, that's it.
Aaron Seeley?
Aaron Seeley, and, like, he got a vote.
Yeah. Or it'd be like Brad Radke getting a Hall of Fame vote. Like,
yeah.
Okay, no. Like, none of us were going to sit here and disrespect Brad Radke, and none of us were going to sit here and disrespect LaTroy Hawkins, but someone voted for them to be in the Hall of Fame, and now we have to crap on them? Like, it's ridiculous. So people are wondering, why did someone vote for LaTroy Hawkins to be in the Hall of Fame? And he wrote a piece in USA Today yesterday. I'm just going to read it. There's no need for any witch hunt or investigating Twitter timelines for clues. I'm the one. I voted for LaTroy Hawkins for the Hall of Fame. Go ahead, mock, ridicule, tease, jeer. Of the 164 public and anonymous voters identified so far, nobody else has cast a vote for LaTroy Hawkins. Let me take you back to 1993. This is how the story starts. It was the year of Reggie Jackson being elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame, the only one to make it in 1993. Although five others were on the ballot, Phil Niekro, Orlando Cepeda, Tony Perez, Ron Santo, and Joe Torre, they would later join him in the future. When the ballot was revealed, there were five players who didn't receive a single vote. One of them broke my heart. Hal McRae. Hal McRae didn't receive a single vote. There was no player I respected and admired more as a young beat reporter covering the Royals more than Hal McRae. I was in awe of the passion and fervor in which he played the game. And to this day, I've never seen a greater clubhouse leader than this man. I was sickened to see that no one voted for Hal McRae to be in the Hall of Fame. I vowed that if a time ever came again that someone meant that much to me and was that respected by his teammates, peers, coaches, managers, and yes, writers, I would vote for him no matter how his numbers looked on a Hall of Fame ballot. That's why I voted for LaTroy Hawkins. Two quick things, all right? Number one, this is absurd. The Hall of Fame is not intended to reward nice guys or guys who played really hard.
This is incredible.
It's intended to reward the greatest players of all time, okay? Second thing, if I'm LaTroy Hawkins, I'm not honored by this. This is the most patronizing thing someone could ever do.
Yeah.
Pat me on the head and be like, listen, your numbers aren't anywhere near good enough, but you were such a great guy. I just feel bad. Man, I just feel bad for you. I mean, he's literally saying, I just felt bad for LaTroy Hawkins. I wouldn't want this if I was LaTroy Hawkins. Why are you putting unnecessary attention? Now people are going to have to go through and mentally like conclude that he's not a Hall of Famer by going through his numbers again, right? Oh, look at that. He blew eight saves in 2002. Like, what are you doing? I read this and I was like, Bob.
So hold on a second. I got to back up because I'm having problems processing this. So Hal McRae, who was a good player, didn't get a vote on a Hall of Fame ballot because he was not a Hall of Fame player.
That's correct.
And in 1993...
He's a great guy and a great leader and a clubhouse guy. That's fine. So was Nick Punta.
So going on 30 years ago, Bob Nightingale saw this and felt so bad. Is he now going to vote on his ballot for everybody who he knows might not get a vote? Because there have to be a few of those almost yearly, right? Who just turn up on the ballots?
The three best clubhouse guys that I was ever around covering the Twins for 3 years. So this is just my perspective. Same as Bob. Like, all right, as a writer and as a guy who was in the clubhouse, right?
Sure, you see.
Guys, the three best I can remember, there's probably a couple others.
Valencia, no question about it. Yeah, you can leave him.
Danny V.
Nick Punto was one of them.
Oh, gritty.
Carl Pavano was another one. I don't think people would have said that about his time in New York, but people definitely said it about his time in Minnesota. And Mike Redmond. Three guys
Hall of Famer for sure.
Great leaders behind the scenes would take young players under their wings, right? Would tutor players. They were basically like assistant coaches on the roster. They are not Hall of Famers.
But how can you? I don't understand. So if Bob committed to doing this for Hawk, he almost is going to have to commit now on a yearly basis to check marking the guys that he doesn't think will get a vote. Like, it makes no sense. It's not the purpose.
He didn't vote for Scott Rolen, by the way.
But it would be like,
love Scott Rolen.
But it would be like if there was a third party who ran for president, and I'm like, I know this person ain't getting votes. You know what? I feel pretty bad for him or her.
He put Torrey Hunter on the ballot too, just so you know.
Yeah, but I don't have a problem with that.
Torrey's not a Hall of Famer, but it's a better case to make in
but
that realm.
That might be you might believe Torrey is. I personally don't, but that's fine. But LaTroy, there's no debate about. Like, he just did that, as Phil said, to be condescending. And to be like, I didn't want you to feel bad. But I have so many questions off this. And I just continue to go down the avenue of, I don't think giving all these people ballots is a really good idea.
Dude,
I just don't.
I mean, like, so here, and Royce, you would say, well, I mean, the fact that there's 600 people that vote means that you get to the conclusion that you get to, and that's how it works. Now, you get 10 spots on your ballot. I think it's 10 now.
It's 10.
You get 10 spots on your ballot.
Yep.
He filled out. He said he thought there were 8 Hall of Famers. And I don't have his ballot in front of me, but I saw some people commenting that he also may have put Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens in, which I do. I would.
He probably
I would.
Did. He probably did.
But it's amazing that you would go through and you would say, because LaTroy Hawkins, he may not be a Hall of Fame player statistically, but he's a Hall of Fame human, and therefore I'm putting him on my ballot. And then put Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds also on your ballot, who are not Hall of Fame humans. And I would also say Scott Rolen, who was a Rookie of the Year. He's a World Series champion. He's a 7-time All-Star, and he's an 8-time Gold Glover. Like, if you're doing this and not putting a guy like that on your Hall of Fame ballot, it's also ridiculous. Yep. It's just ridiculous.
And that's what I'm saying.
It's patronizing, for God's sakes.
But, I mean, that to me, if that's going to be Bob's platform from now on, that puts you in an impossible position of now, because I don't think that you can now get your ballot next year and be like, that guy's not going to get votes, but I didn't like him as much. I mean, it just makes no sense. And but the whole problem.
He also put Curt Schilling on his ballot. Just saying, on his ballot.
Did you guys see that? that people that voted for Schilling were calling the Hall of Fame committee after the
insurrection,
January 6th insurrection, to try to get them to take Schilling off their ballot.
Yeah. See, and listen, I'll just say I despise Curt Schilling as a human.
Yep.
But I think Curt Schilling is a baseball Hall of Famer.
What do you guys think? I really believe that the process that the Hall of Fame should tell its voters something that gives this complete clarity. Because like this whole thing of it matters how you acted off the field. We don't know. I mean, how can anybody know? How can anybody know? I will always go back to the case of Darren Sharper, a very good football player who turned out to be a man who's probably, I think, going to spend the rest of his life in jail, okay?
Yeah.
Why are we trying to be like, Bonds was a jackass, in my opinion, and so he doesn't get on because of that. Like, they're giving people that aren't even close to being qualified like this set of wide interpretation guidelines that they shouldn't have. In my opinion, this should be about one thing. Just cut it down to one thing. What, unless they're incarcerated, okay? What did they do on the field? Like, let's take out any murkiness of, I'm going to make up the rules myself, because you're literally telling them, make up the rules. If Ty Cobb, who was in the first Hall of Fame class, okay? If Ty Cobb came up for eligibility today,
oh my God,
a ton of people wouldn't vote for Ty Cobb because he was a jackass.
He was a racist and he may have murdered somebody.
He's a terrible guy. But you know what? I want that taken away from the voters. So all you can consider is what he did as the Georgia Peach.
I agree. Also, as time passes, like at the time, I think at the time people thought Ty Cobb was a jackass. But like, as an example, as time passes, you start to realize, those people were more racist than we thought 40 years ago, right? Like, time evolves and changes. And I want to bring this to a real world example too, just for fun. Like, cause I just keep going back to how insulting this would be. So, all right, Judd, listen, it's your time for the Minnesota Broadcast Hall of Fame, and you were on the ballot, but I don't think you were good enough at your job to get into the Minnesota Broadcasting Hall of Fame. But I just feel like you were a good guy. I felt terrible. I felt sickened. I felt sickened that nobody was going to vote for you. And so I voted for you. Hey, man, I voted for you.
Wouldn't
you feel like?
Because in 2004, Matt Thomas didn't get a damn vote.
I was sickened.
And that made you want to cry. That made you want to weep.
So, man.
But I mean, why can't we simplify this entire process?
Imagine if I loved Juan Pierre. I loved Juan Pierre because that's who I was when I was a baseball player.
Yes. I gotta look up his
numbers. A singles hitter, stole a crap ton of bases.
And he was good.
He was good
at what he did.
Like a damn near 300 career hitter, I'd bet.
Yep.
Yeah. Juan Pierre, man.
Yeah.
Just pulling up his numbers right now.
And
I would love for him to be in the Hall of Fame, but guess what? He doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Declan Hall of Fame. He's not in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Dude, Juan Pierre stole 600 bases in his career. 295 hitter.
Yeah.
And I believe he was on World Series. He was on the 03 Marlins World Series winning team.
So Bob voted for the Hawk and gave him his one vote because he felt bad. But this is also a process that had Johan Santana fall off the ballot after one time on because he didn't get 5%.
Yep. And Johan Santana, who was the best starting pitcher in baseball for like 7 years. And but his longevity. I don't give a rat's ass. Like,
you know what the key is?
Sandy Koufax didn't pitch very long.
Either get an exclusive group of very smart baseball people to discuss this, But the problem is this. 600 ballots puts the ballots in too many people's hands who don't have the ability to digest the assignment that they've been given. And so you literally have to give them the exact game plan and exactly what you want.
I got one time on our old 9-to-1 show, like this is probably early on in one of our first couple of years. And I won't say his name, but we had this discussion about, okay, 600 people have a Hall of Fame vote, and a lot of them aren't even in sports media, don't even cover baseball. And I named one of them locally by name. I said, like, for instance, yeah, this guy, right. We like this guy, but this guy hasn't covered baseball in like 20 years. He's been covering a different sport for like 20 years and has built the better part of his career covering this other sport. And that person caught wind of it and back-channeled me through a series of Twitter DMs and was like apoplectic. Like wanted me to know why he still has a vote, why he still takes it very seriously, and why like he felt bad that I would go on the microphone and call him out specifically. I do feel bad for naming his name, but it was like, I hear you, but if you're not like 20, 25 years removed from covering a sport,
yeah, you shouldn't be voting for the Hall of Fame for it.
I don't know. So, anyways. And that's Twins Tuesday.
We're gonna win, Twins. We're gonna score. We're gonna win, Twins. We're gonna score. We're gonna win, Twins. What's that baseball score?
Okay, we're going to wrap with Ricey here in just a few minutes, but every week, our friend Declan Goff, and lately we've put him on some football film assignments. Mm-hmm. Once we put him on a bidet review, but the segment is called Dex Reviews. And if you guys have suggestions, like Judd anything. Just got a new iPhone, so maybe we have Judd as a guest host at some point next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
To talk about like face recognition and stuff.
I just had to ask how to get back to the main menu. It's not off to a good start.
Swipe up.
It's not off to a good start.
Just throw it on the ground and stomp on it. That's how you do it. Really easy. So, all right, Dex, what are we reviewing this week here?
We will not be reviewing seasons of ER. That did not happen this weekend. But we will be
doing... Oh, is that a bad sign?
No, it's not a bad sign. It just never came up.
Oh, really?
It never happened. Never transpired. Never transpired. There was games played. There was fun things happening, but there was no ER.
Okay. What type of games were you playing?
A great new game. It's called Buzz.
It's called Crouching Tiger, Hidden Declan.
Hidden Declan. It's a card game. It's called Buzz. It's the game that keeps your friends hydrated in good ways. Highly recommend
it. The game is called Buzz?
Buzzed.
This sounds like the exact type of game I have advised you not to play and just to drink instead.
Is this a game that you guys made up?
It's a card game I bought at Target.
Okay.
Yep. You draw a card, you read it, and if you are that person and that answer, you have to take a drink.
So it's like you have to raise your hand. Okay.
It's a fun game. That's a fun one. I recommend it.
All right.
Keeps your friends hydrated. But we're not going to do that. We're going to do Quiddy Pay, the defensive end from Michigan. Football.
Football.
So I went back. A couple things with Quiddy Pay. I went back first. I watched the Gopher game because Michigan played the Gophers to kick off the 2020 season. It was a very forgettable game. Now, Quiddy didn't make much of an impact in that game until the fourth quarter when the game was completely out of reach, but I believe he had back-to-back sacks in the fourth quarter against Tanner Morgan. And this is a guy who, on most mocks, is probably the second defensive end, to come off the board behind, is it Rozo from Miami? Gregory Rozo? I liked what I saw from Quiddy. So Quiddy's supposed to go anywhere between 20 and like 14 on most big boards, and most, even Daniel Jeremiah just released his top 50 prospects. Quiddy Pay is number 17 on this list. So he's in the range where the Vikes will be picking. Here's what I liked about him. He is quick. He is lean.
Yeah.
He is athletic. And I think the most important one.
Yeah.
Versatility. Outside or inside. He can go either or on sides of the line. Now, most scouts, from what I talked to some scouts last night, they think he's best served on the outside. But I like the versatility of putting him on the outside or the inside. And I know Judd Zolgad would also be a big fan, because that's what we saw against the Saints in the playoff game last year at Danielle Hunter. They were able to move people around. So Quiddy Pay, look at that guy. He is an animal.
Dude, by the way, he's just like, even when his defense is huddling, he's just always in a four-point stance. He doesn't even join the huddle. He's just constantly, even around the house, he's just crawling around.
So you're telling me that he could play the end or the three tech?
Yeah, he could.
I think at 274 is what his listed weight is. He's going to want to bump that up if he's going to play interior defensive line.
Correct.
But he could rush in on a third down.
Yeah, he
in
is
nickel.
He's lean, and I mean he's lean as, and he's 6'4", 275. But I mean the guy is an athletic.
Well, look at that physique.
I'm like
5'8",
275.
There you go.
For God's sakes.
But yeah, he, his pressure guard.
Lane too.
You're a guard, so am I.
You'd be better than Drew Samia and our guy Dakota Dozier.
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't be that bad.
Whoa.
His pressure rate was near the tops in the nation, and I think he's probably going to be a legitimate option for the Vikings. His cons?
Yeah, I want to know, like, what is the chance that he becomes, you know, who are some of these dudes that busted out? Like that, who's the Wisconsin guy that they drafted in 04?
Erasmus James.
Yeah.
So high floor and high ceiling is what most experts have said about him. So he's got a high floor and he's got a high ceiling. I think he's going to have to be well coached. And that's what a scout told me, literally. He has to be well coached. What the scout told me was he is a robot and technically sound. Literally his words.
You know, I feel like then the Vikings would be a great environment because, you know, they've brought, I mean, Danielle Hunter was also kind of a, well, he's an athletic freak, but
right.
Someone's got to coach him up. And I'd say the Vikings did. So
absolutely. So, yeah, the scout told me he's robot and technically sound. That was the exact words. He will punch you in the chest, but he needs to be coached well. How about that for some more football terms?
I think that's
terms. Illegal.
He's Arnold.
Yeah.
For he's Schwarzenegger. He's a robot. He'll punch you in the chest.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that without getting flagged.
I think best case scenario is probably like a Jason Pierre-Paul. Like, I think that's probably, and most experts would agree with that as well.
With more fingers.
With more fingers and doesn't like to play with fireworks because he's an adult who doesn't hold a flaming firework in his hand.
JPP's been great.
Yeah,
but think about how much better he'd be
if he had all five fingers.
It is phenomenal. It is phenomenal. That man is a specimen.
So
Kwity Paye is a specimen.
I think if the Vikings were on 14th, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Kwity Paye is taken. I wouldn't be upset.
So how would you guys feel then if Roger Goodell walks to that podium, or I don't know, he'll probably just be like in his basement with his smoker's jacket on again like last year.
Right.
And he walks up to that Zoom camera and he says, with the 14th pick, the Minnesota Vikings select Michigan defensive end Kwity Paye. And the plan is Danielle Hunter comes back, maybe gets a raise and Kwity Paye, and now they got their bookend pass.
And Michael Pierce is at the nose tackle. Yeah, that could be pretty good. I am not going to be one bit surprised if they take D-line to start with. I'm not going to be surprised at all.
I think it's the leader in the clubhouse right now. I think they're more likely to draft that position based on who's there than a guard. I don't think they're going to take a guard with the 14th pick.
I think that's accurate.
I agree with that. And I think that the two objectives probably when it comes to filling needs on defensive line are probably defensive end and a three tech. And I don't think that there is a three technique worthy of the 14th pick. So I think if you were going to go three technique, you'd probably move back and try and recoup the second round pick that you lost in the Ngakoue trade. But Zim is definitely going to be in Rick's ear, let's say that, to improve that defensive line because it was awful. Hey, have you guys tried, just for fun, ever going into a four-point stance or two-point stance? It will damn near kill you.
A three-point stance.
Two-point stance.
You're just standing.
Yeah. That's my stance.
Three-point stance. Have you guys tried that? I've tried for fun.
Do it right now.
My Corona Hard Seltzers, I've done it in the fridge. Oh,
can't really hear you guys.
It hurts my back. I'm not going
to
lie to you right now.
On camera.
Oh, God.
He might not get up. He might not get up, Dex.
Oh, God.
That's fine. Oh, I have to get up now.
And you have to. But, I mean, when I say hut, you've got to move from that stance. Like, I can balance myself in the stance, but I can't move.
You might be more of a three-point stance guy and then, like, hold the other arm out for balance.
Right.
Or like put the other hand on your other defensive lineman frame.
I would stand up. I'd stand up the whole time.
I think that's why, like, once guys get a little bit older, they want to go to those 3-4 defenses where they can just, let me just stand back here as a linebacker.
But, like, how you get off the ball in that stance is really beyond me.
Yeah, I mean, I quit football in 8th grade, and part of it was the 3-point stance being uncomfortable.
But, like,
the other part was I just didn't like running, so.
Oh, that's why I quit.
Oh, I liked running. I have no problem running.
I went to a captain's practice at Benilde for.
But I didn't play football.
One day, and I quit.
Yeah, football.
Because we ran a lot. It's like, this ain't going to work.
That was the one
me.
Thing I knew I could be good at was running.
Yeah, well, because you're super thin.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. When you're a little bit bigger, it's pretty terrible.
Yeah, you've got a build that's perfect for a guy who likes to run. Yeah.
I remember one time.
Phil and I, not so much.
I played like 3-4 years of football from like 5th grade to 8th grade or something. And I remember like one of the junior high football practices, which start, you know, Minnesota's pretty hot in August. You get those 90-degree days. And we had I sort of realized we were being duped and tricked into more conditioning when
how are you duped?
The coaches said, you know, like the day before, the coaches said, if you guys don't pick up everything off the locker room floor, then you're going to get more conditioning the next day, right?
Right.
And then they like found a piece of tape or a sock on the locker room floor the next day, right? And so we had to do what was called a 350 multiple, where you have to run around like two football fields, whatever it is. Like you're running around two side by side football fields. And then they said, all right, on the next one, if you all of you, if you all don't beat this certain time, then you all have to keep doing more until you all beat that certain time. And of course, there's like, you know, I wasn't Mr. In Shape, but like there's a couple of whales in the back who play like defensive tackle.
Yep.
And they can't beat the time. And then
Pat Williams, you had Big Pat.
Then we all have to run more, and they wouldn't give us water breaks.
What?
This is before Corey Stringer. This is before Corey Stringer.
So you couldn't get a water break?
Couldn't get a water break. And I was like, I'm playing baseball.
As a kid at Buffalo High School?
I'm playing baseball. This is ridiculous.
That seems like a really bad idea.
Baseball practice is way better. You just stand in the outfield and shag flies for 3 hours.
Once I learned that I couldn't play second base and I could just play the outfield, that was one of the best realizations of my baseball career.
Just sit out there. Fly ball comes at you once every 10 minutes.
Sometimes you don't even have to catch it. Sometimes you just let it go over your head. It's great. Yep. Or let it drop.
It's the best.
Relay! Yeah. Relay!
Speaking of Juan Pierre.
Cut and hold!
I needed two cutoff men for new alarm over here, but that's okay.
I could see you not getting the ball back.
No. I remember...
Your fault, but I could see the second baseman coming way out in the right field.
I didn't get contact until I was like 17 years old, and I remember I went to an eye appointment, and then I had a baseball practice right afterwards, which was actually kind of dangerous because like you get your eyes dilated, and then I went straight to practice, and the doctor was like, no, you should probably rest, don't go to practice. I was like, I'm going to baseball practice. It's fine. And I remember this is actually a good story. Oh, I remember so vividly having my contacts in, and I was in left field, and I could see all the seams on the baseball rotating, like coming at me as a fly ball. And I'm like, this is what the fly ball was supposed to look like for the last 10 years. I was just seeing this white blur coming at me, and I was able to finally shag a fly ball, and it was too late because at that point I only had like my last year of eligibility to play baseball.
What would your life and career have been like if you had gotten those contacts like 10 years earlier? Wouldn't be doing this.
I think I wouldn't be hitting nine. I might be hitting two. Might be hitting one.
He'd be in the league.
Yeah.
He'd be the ninth ranked Twins prospect who they wouldn't give up for anything. We still got this 27-year-old Declan Goff. Come on, Thad, let's trade him.
By the way, we have one more Thad soundbite.
Okay.
If you want to guess, I'm going to say existentially. Existentially is the word.
What's the soundbite you're hovering over?
J-Hap.
Succulent. I'm going succulent.
Wow. We really like J-Hap. He's a succulent.
He throws a succulent ball.
Well, Darren, I think you've seen over the last couple of years, we've been very attentive to, obviously we're looking for the most talented players we can possibly recruit.
Attentive.
But we're in a beneficial spot. Free agents view us as a very competitive, attractive destination. Hmm. So we're allowed to be a little selective. We can marry up talent with makeup.
Marry up.
They'd be a little too selective.
Did they sign Jay Happ or Koufax?
Phil Mackey.
You know, the one thing that sets Phil apart is Phil's been really good for the game. He takes time out for people. And
Judd Zolgad.
One of the most well-respected, esteemed journalists. Guy seems to break news before you even knew there was something to break.
Mackey and Judd.
All right, Patrick, give us the play-by-play. So you are now on the COVID vaccine lottery list?
Yes, it's right there. I think the odds are right there with Mega Millions, but that's okay. What the heck? It was a very, at first I looked on it at like 5:05. It supposedly opened at 5, right? 5 a.m. At 5:05, there were 18,000 people ahead of me, and it said, wait should be an hour.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, oh, my God, this will be over. I tweeted out, this will be over by Lincoln's birthday, you know. But then it really went fast. And, there was, I don't know how many tens of thousands, probably well over 100,000, I'm sure they logged into it today. But it went really, but by 6:10, you just leave your computer open and it, you keep moving up, and by 6 o'clock I was in, and by 6:08 I had both my wife and I registered. So it was a much smoother process than last week, I guess, where everybody was trying to log into different windows and things like that. So They're trying to do something. At least they're trying to get rid of these vaccines, okay? Instead of just have them sit in a drawer over there on the
I love this week, like, you know, not to go super deep here, but I saw the CDC director was doing interviews the last couple of days, and, you know, and she's asked, so where are we sort of at with, you know, how much vaccine do we have? And she's like, I have no idea. Nobody knows what we have. So that's
good. Yeah. It was, it has not been terribly well organized to this point, but I think they're trying now. So I'm not complaining. Now, somebody sent me another outlet that was possible for me for one of these health organizations we go to a clinic that's involved with them, and she said, I got a niece who's very active in trying to get every relative she has that's old vaccinated. But she stopped me at, then you enter your username and password. I said, that's it. We're dead ended right there. I have no idea what those are.
Social Security?
I try to keep track of about 8 of them that I do in my daily work. That's enough. So,
we just need your address, credit card information,
yes.
Social Security. Yeah. That's all.
Boy, they are. This last week, they've been last few days, they've been very worried about the guarantee on my vehicles. About 5 calls a day to the cell phones. We've talked about this before, but 10, 12 years ago, before the cell phone companies started selling our names and numbers to these scumbags, it was a lot easier. Well, remember when we had cell phones and nobody could get your number unless you wanted to give it to them?
Yeah,
it was great.
You know, I actually I took a screenshot the other day. This is the beauty of modern technology. I don't know if you guys can see this. I'll pop it up on the screen, but it literally just popped up as telemarketer calling from Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Today I got one that said spam risk.
I get spam. Spam on
yeah,
mine.
I get spam. Sometimes.
Yeah. But they're out to get boys when you get old. They love to take a shot that you're senile, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They really think they're really hoping that you've lost it and they can convince you to run up to the nearest Western Union and send them $3,000 so that you can maintain your Social Security benefits.
You know, my dad, I would say like 2 or 3 times a year, and my dad is, you know, 78, but like an old soul 78 going on probably closer to 85 or 90. And he'll call me 3 times a year and just say, listen, Philip, I just want to remind you, some of these scammer calls can sound really realistic. And I'm like, Dad, what do you mean? First of all, like, don't answer the phone if you don't know the number. And yes. Second of all, hello, I am your great aunt from Siberia, and I have a $4 million inheritance. Please call back with your Social Security number. I'm not getting duped
by that. Just
text
it to me.
Sorry.
Well, that's the way it used to be, but now it's much more sophisticated. It's that, you know, they got the voice, the automated voice that makes it sound like there's some from some agency that's, I've warned you before, you know, if you don't, you know, yes. If you don't do this, you're never, you know, your loved ones are going to be removed from the home.
The IRS wants
right
to talk
now.
To you now.
Oh, you got one right now?
I'm literally getting one right now.
Yeah. When is the last time that you guys picked up a phone call where you didn't have the actual name of the caller?
I pick up if it's an Arizona area code. I pick it up just in case.
Okay.
I am discovering, however, if you get somebody's cell phone, you know, in my job trying to get, you know, hold of a coach here or there or something like that, nobody's picking up anymore. You got to text them and let them know who you are. They're not. And that's probably smart, you know, because anyway.
Yeah. Speaking of executives, we got to play a soundbite for you here. This is Thad Levine on the Scoop podcast with Doogie yesterday, and Doogie was asking him, all right, what's the deal? All these other teams are making trades, and you guys still looking to add? This is Thad's answer.
So, yeah, no, I think our goal is to add to this team. We're desirous of adding both quantitatively and qualitatively. So
they're looking
quantitatively and qualitatively.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good. I did hear they're going to make, I did hear from a good source, there's a very good chance that they're going to make a trade that I very much approve of. Pepsi for Coke.
Wow.
Oh.
Now, I'm not sure it's happening, but it's, their negotiations are underway, and I'm extremely hopeful. That, to me, when the ballpark reopens, is more important than getting a good starting pitcher.
Do you think Pepsi could throw Trevor Story in as a little as a sweetener?
You need the Coke button, Patrick. That's what you need.
I'm a Diet Coke guy through and through. And
you need the 45 Coke button.
The only thing Trump and I agree on is having a red button when you want a Diet Coke. I would approve of that strategy.
You don't even need the butler with the silver platter. You just need the Diet Coke.
No, just bring it in there, baby. Hand me that. Or I'd have the little refrigerator behind the Oval Office desk. So that, yeah, I think you could get one of those in the Oval Office, right?
Absolutely. So the big move that we've all been told is coming is a soft drink. That at least we know.
Not set. It's qualitatively and quantitatively, I think.
Oh, my God.
Pepsi's like, we're out. We don't know what the hell you're talking about anymore.
Boy, Levine, good for Doogie getting Levine, because, boy, since that Philadelphia thing, when he either had the job and turned it down or didn't have the job, he's been pretty low-key. He isn't. I've texted him a couple of times to ask him. You know, usually he's pretty good at, you know, responding to a question or something like that. And he's been, I think he's afraid. He didn't want people asking him about the Philadelphia job, so he didn't respond to stuff. So
yeah,
that's what I thought. But I don't know what, this whole Cactus League thing yesterday where Arizona doesn't want him to start the Cactus League. There's no chance spring training starts on time, especially I finally read something fairly instructive about what negotiations are going on, and the owners, management, Manfred apparently has asked them to start the season a month later, the players, and the players have said, okay, pay us our full salaries. So
gosh,
that's why the owners then said, okay, we're going to start at the middle of February. But I don't think it's going to happen to you. I think they might have spring training in the middle of March, and April 20th might be opening day.
And just play a bunch of doubleheaders. And
if they start.
Yeah. And then they'll do the 7-inning thing again this year.
Yeah.
You know, they'll do the 7-inning thing again.
If they start, though, because the whole thing is they have to basically do a year agreement that will then go into the strike that's going to occur after the 2021 season.
They are not going to do that. From what everything I heard is that they're just going to try to take care of another pandemic season and then battle it out at after next year. So
it's going to be ridiculous.
We may not see normalcy till 2023. So I don't know.
Hey, we're speaking of 2023. Where's Aaron Rodgers going to play in like 2022-23?
He'll be in Green Bay next year, don't you think?
I think right now he would like out, but it's going to be really hard for a million reasons for that to happen now. So I think he's there
what
now.
What do you think? Does he have a Northern California link strong enough to want to play 2 years for the 49ers who need a quarterback?
Probably.
His certainly not his family.
No. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they smoothed it over since various girlfriends.
I don't think so.
I don't know if they have or not. But no, but I mean,
he'd love to play there, I'm sure. Yeah.
As he grew up a 49er fan, and that would be
in Chico.
That would seem to be the one place where he could end up, right? Because they can send you something for him too, right?
So mm-hmm.
I think the Packers would have to take Garoppolo though, wouldn't they?
Well, Garoppolo, I think the Niners can just cut him loose. I think they only owe him like $1.5 million or $2 million this year in dead money. So they could just say goodbye.
I'd hate to be Jordan Love trying to replace that guy after the season he had this year.
Oh my God.
I was over there, you know, the Vikings were the first to play over there. Remember, weren't they on a Monday night? Weren't they the first to play when he made his first start?
Yes.
Aaron yeah, that's right.
2008. Yeah. Monday night game.
They were 90% of the jerseys were farm jerseys.
Yep.
And I was talking to these, I got there in the middle of the afternoon and talking to all these tailgaters. This guy can't play. You know, they were just outraged. And Rodgers had sat around 3 years, and you think probably was more developed having a full college career than mm-hmm. than Love is. Mm-hmm. So you would get a much more raw product than Rodgers was. Wasn't that Tavares against him? Was that Tavares against him?
It would have been
2008. Well, yeah, because they lost that game, and then they lost to the Colts, and Tavares right. got benched for Gus Frerotte. So, yeah, that was Tavares.
And Rodgers wasn't very good that night, but I remember Tavares threw a big interception. Right?
And Rodgers ran a ton back then. He would just take off.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's got to be the kick in the lower body area to him of all time, though, losing that game. Oof, that was the way this team was playing. The opponent they had coming to town, it was a good team, but not a great team. Brady is the opponent. That has to be the
yep.
worst of his bad losses. I mean, the onside kick in Seattle wasn't good, but this one was. I get a kick out of them. People saying, "Oh, well, Rodgers has lost 4 straight NFC title games. He didn't lose the one in Seattle. The idiot on the onside kick lost that one." Yeah. What was that guy's name?
Bostwick? He played for the Vikings.
Yeah,
he Bostwick. Played for the Vikings very yeah. briefly then, I think, in training yeah. camp the next year.
That's, I mean, they beat a great team that day, and then this idiot dropped the onside kick.
Yeah.
Back when an onside kick was recoverable, which we saw recovered this time. It was amazing. The Buffalo guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it didn't bother the Chiefs a bit. That was the best part. The Chiefs were like, "Oh, we lost the ball. Too bad."
Yeah, we'll let you score here, and then we'll get a first down. So. Although, do you see who's going to be playing left tackle for him?
Mike Remmers, baby.
Mike Remmers blocking JPP. I'm not sure about that one. Pat, better with those two defensive ends against those two offensive tackles. Pat better get ready to run out of the pocket like he does. But he's not going to be comfortable, I'll tell you that, because that Tampa Bay defense was way better than I thought it was. They're good.
Yeah, they can make quarterbacks miserable.
Brandon sure. Bostic.
Brandon Bostic.
That was the guy's name who fumbled the onside.
Yeah, they cut him pretty quick.
Hey, have you seen that what was I going to say? Dang it, something about the Chiefs. What's their running? Is now the little guy's back at running back, right?
Edwards Allaire,
yeah.
The LSU guy who missed most of the season. They keep getting those guys rattled up and hurt, though. They're it's not that they're lacking for weapons, but you never – It's always hard to figure out who's playing, who's the running back down there.
They just run jet sweeps to Tyreek Hill, and
they're all fast. McCole, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, who they got? They got a new guy I never heard of, Pringle Potato Chips, who just takes. There's another guy that runs 108.6 or something too. I never heard of
Potato Chips.
They keep
hand up to Nacho Grande.
He keeps fighting them, man. They go to track meets to look for him. Yeah. But I think the Tampa Bay pass rush makes it a little closer than it's that people expect it to be. What's the number? 7?
I believe it's 3. I think it opened
really?
Up.
Really?
I think.
Wow. I think, yeah. Brady money, huh?
Three and a half.
Money, huh?
Yep.
I just love that we've got like the two biggest stones on the table offensive coaches in the league now. Arians just wanting to throw 50-yard passes every drop back, and Andy Reid, who will just – He'll bring a backup quarterback in and throw Hail Marys and fourth down passes. It'll be fun.
You know who's great? The Honey Badger, man.
Oh
wow.
Yeah.
I mean, remember when they brought him in, he was kind of iffy, right? He'd been hurt a lot. He hadn't played much. He's, man, is he smart. He's unbelievable.
Cardinals let him walk.
He knows when he, come up and set the edge and turn him inside, and he's a little tiny monster tackling people. Man, is he good.
Yep.
He's just fantastic. I always thought it was kind of built on returning punts and stuff like he did at LSU and a fancy nickname and everything, but that son of a gun is great.
He is. By the way, it looks like I saw something just scroll across that Winfield will – he's expected to play Winfield for Tampa Bay.
Well, game, so. He's their version of Honey Badger. That's, yeah. You know, he'll get you a 15-yarder once in a while. He's a mean little son of a gun. Hard to believe he was basically a two-star when they recruited him. He didn't even, you know, if a big-time program recruits you, they pretty much put you three stars on you. I think he was a two-star when they got him.
It's got to be helpful for – it's probably helpful for your development when Antoine Winfield Sr. is just like an assistant coach in your life all the time, you know?
Well, his old man's the best tackler I ever saw.
Yeah.
And this kid is just as good and covers, you know, as a safety, covers more, you know. You don't think a safety's that size either.
Right.
He's not big, but, man, is he.
He can hit, though, just like his dad. The Bucks, Patrick, are rowing the boat. That's what they're doing. They're rowing the damn boat. Got Tyler Johnson, Antoine Winfield Jr. They're P.J. Fleckians.
Good thing, and Tyler Johnson, very bright. He didn't use one of those tight jerseys.
Stretched
he used
out.
A loose jersey, so when they grabbed it stretched out 2 feet.
Yep. All right, Pat, we got to run. We will talk to you tomorrow, sir.
See ya.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you.
All right, that's Wrapping with Royce every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday here on Mackie and Judd. You can find Royce Unchained wherever you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com, and the Score North app every Monday with Judd. All right, boys, write that down, predictions tomorrow. Bring the heat.
Royal Rumble. Bachelor. I'm bringing Royal Rumble and Bachelor predictions to the table.
Look at you guys.
Love it.
Look at you
guys. We got to fire up one of these episodes maybe next week of Judd Explains Wrestling.
That's right.
I got to watch some of these. I've got the whole list, and I have not watched one yet.
Judd Explains Wrestling to Phil and Declan.
Interprets it.
Sure, whatever.
I interpret. I can't explain it. It's unexplainable to me, but I can interpret what I saw.
I'm
very Thad Levine-like interpretation.
We'll mix it in next week. We'll see you guys tomorrow.